Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, I'm guessing a lot of our listeners are tuning in to this episode because it was a rather disastrous game yesterday, or on Thursday night. Lions succumbed to the Patriots 31-3.
Yeah.
Not a lot of positives to talk about. That's why they come here, to hear you. Because you're going to tell us, you're going to help me. You're going to talk me, not off the ledge. I'm nowhere near the ledge yet, but a lot of people are.
Sure.
I'm sure. And you're going to tell us why this is not so bad.
Deal.
All right, so first things first, we got these tiny little roster moves that are really affecting the bottom of the roster. Lions signed cornerback Tarvarius McFadden, and in a corresponding move, released wide receiver Deontez Alexander.
Might as well just carry right over to the next one, too.
Yeah, Lions waive McFadden after signing him, and then go ahead and sign cornerback Jonathan Alston.
Right, so it's just, this is that 90-man, you know, that last five spots on the roster are always getting turned over, looking for diamond in the rough, essentially, right? They kind of, it's always been talked about with the with Quinn that those last five spots are basically like just extended tryouts. You know, you don't get a guy, you don't get a chance to give guys tryouts other than when they are preparing for the draft, where you get to work them out like with your team. You just have to, you know, make assumptions based on what you've watched on film, or you know, their athletic skills, or previous scouting reports on them. And so this is how you utilize the preseason, by, you know, giving these guys these longer looks. With McFadden, he was injured the second day he was there, so he's unable to work. So he was waived injured, and now he's reverted back to the Lions. Lions will either sign him with, or give him an injury settlement, or
which is likely. We've seen that a lot last season.
Yeah, they haven't announced him going to IR, and because he reverted back to the roster, they either had to put him on IR or they had to do an injury settlement, because having him on the roster is 91, and that's not allowed. And so they must have done something before the game. And the fact that he's not on their IR means they probably reached an injury settlement without actually announcing it. So, you know, it's just, these are, like you said, these are minor tryouts.
Let's not dwell on this, but Deontez Alexander
sure
has come and gone a lot.
Yes.
Do you think he comes back again in the coming weeks?
Look, you've got a 6'2 super athlete who, if he could ever learn how to get off a jam, would be, well, he'd do well. But he hasn't learned in 2 years, and so, or, you know, a year and a half.
Got to get getting close to the end of the line.
Yeah, I mean, he's been with the team long enough.
All right, next little piece of news. Joe Dahl, offensive guard, more known as a fullback, signed a 2-year contract extension. Smart move by the Dahl camp, because he didn't make himself any money yesterday.
Yeah, you know, no one really did on that offensive line yesterday, right? But I think it's a smart move for both sides. You know, hitting the market for Joe Dahl isn't going to be that lucrative. He might get a 1-year prove-it type deal. Now, this way, he gets two. He gets to stay in a system that he knows. There's value here in the fact that they can use him in multiple facets, like you said, including fullback. And so it's a good move all around. And I don't think this necessarily puts him in any better position to win a starting job, but it definitely doesn't hurt. And, you know, I think the guard spots are very much up for grabs. And so this, you know, when you're looking at the team long term, they might be more apt to give Dahl a shot if Wiggins struggles again.
All right. The Lions removed Darius Slay from the non-football injury list.
Yeah.
He played last night, only 6 plays or something, right?
Yeah, he played, let me get the exact number. 6 plays, right on the nose.
I read your article.
Oh, good.
Jeez.
I wrote too many. You
can't even remember what you wrote.
Well, accurately, with the like specific numbers like this.
Oh, I think I got a little lucky, except for I knew a bunch of the handful of defensive starters that will likely be starters in week one played 1 series at the most, 6 plays.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot. We'll get into the snap counts a little bit later as we go, but yeah, it's a... They've been working him in slowly in training camp, and then I was actually surprised he got six snaps last night. Like, he got that one series, and then that was it. I mean, like, Rashad Melvin didn't even get a single snap. And so I thought he might get a snap over Slay, but they're just looking for ways to get him back into some doing some football things. So,
all right, Lions remove wide receiver Tommy Lee Lewis from the PUP. No better time than right now. He's still on the outside looking in and making the roster, right?
Yeah, and Slay was taken off NFI about a week ago, and so he's had a week to acclimate. Tommy Lee Lewis was just taken off not just like 3 days ago, so they're still slowly working him back in. He's only seen time as a returner in practice, and then didn't get any reps in last night's game. So, yeah, he's still pretty firmly on the outside looking in right now.
All right. You want to dig into the full injury report of the team?
Yeah, there's a lot going on, so I thought I'd kind of blow through it as fast as I can.
Do it fast.
But touching on as many guys as possible. So Damon Harrison's still on the NFI.
Due to a contract.
It could very well be due to a contract. He's not really doing a whole lot, but that's to be expected. As a nose tackle and a veteran, he really doesn't have to. That's kind of the status. I get questions about him constantly. We really don't know, and the Lions aren't going to release an injury report until the regular season, so we don't know if it's a contract or an injury or whatnot. Flowers, we know, is a shoulder. He is working out more and more all the time, so hopefully that's something that in the next couple of weeks he'll come off, but again, they're not going to rush anything with him. Longa is also trying to improve, but again, as we've talked about previously, it's a long time for him to come back from an ACL. At this point, he's so far removed and not participating. He's kind of a fringe roster player as it is. I actually wonder if he might end up being put on IR and they kind of like, you know, redshirt him and maybe he becomes a guy.
A 2-year redshirt?
Maybe he's a guy they bring back like midway, where they think he can contribute in the back half, but he's not going to be there in the first half, and then they want to keep him in the locker room and rehabbing. They did that last year with Andy Jones. He was such a valuable special teams player, they put him on IR and then brought him back midway to contribute the back half. I could see the same thing happening with Longo. Arm is still in that brace.
Gotta be killing you.
He's a key cog here in this defense. Now, his spirits are very much up. He is very jovial and interactive. He's not shying away from the press, which a lot of injured guys do. And he seems to be doing things in the right way. We still don't know exactly where on his arm is injured or what the prognosis is, but he seems to be optimistic. Again, he's such a vital piece, though. I'm not expecting them to rush anything back on this. Same thing's true with Mike Daniels, although the expectation with Daniels is that he will start practicing as soon as tomorrow in preparation for Houston. He has said he could play when needed. He's ready to go. They just are taking it slow. But he also said that he's expecting to play in Houston in those joint practices. Another defensive tackle, Ray Smith. He was injured in camp with the Patriots. He's not doing anything. It's bad news for him being his spot on the roster. Austin Bryant, the Jack linebacker, who can also play down defensive end. He, like Longa, is in a spot where he had surgery. We don't know exactly where he's at. We don't know if he re-injured his shoulder that he had surgery on. We just know that he's out and injured. With the depth that they have at Jack linebacker and defensive end, I wouldn't be surprised if they also redshirt him and put him on IR. If it's a longer term injury than if it's not something he can come back from in the next week or so, because I don't think they're gonna bring him back a week from now and then try and think they can get him up to go in the 2 weeks after. So I would keep an eye. The longer he stays out, the more it looks like he could be headed to an IR thing. Carney, I would have said the same thing about, but he has actually started getting more into practice again. He actually could come back in the next couple of days as well, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the next, in the Houston practices. Jared Davis was injured in the Patriots, as was Garrett Dooley, DeWalty's linebackers. Davis obviously is the starter. Dooley is a guy who was up and coming. That their absence made room for Miles Killebrew to play a bunch of snaps this last game. So both those guys could come back whenever. Marcus Cooper has been on and off, so we'll see how he goes. Again, longer he's out, the worse it is. Tabor, when you talk to coaches, it sounds like it could be a more serious injury than the rest, which means he could be vulnerable to an IR thing as well.
Oh, boy. What a turn.
Just kind of my read between the lines. Now watch when I say that.
You'll be back at practice Monday morning.
Yeah, exactly right. But you could see a tone change when you talked to Patricia about him. He seemed disappointed that Tabor had missed or had lost this opportunity to compete for a starting spot. We talk about Darius Slay being back. Devin Kennard's also back. These are recent. Christian Jones has been limited. He should be back in full relatively soon. Didn't play in the game. We talked about Tommy Lee Lewis as well in that same fashion. Powell was nicked up, but he seemed okay. He had a really nice play on Thursday night. And then Jonathan Wynn, who had been injured going into the game, actually got some playing time in the game. And that was a change. He actually didn't practice at all against the Patriots, but then still made it into the game. So that's a step in the right direction for him as well. And he's got a deep roster to climb here, so good for him to get back into it. Now, in the game, there were several other injuries, the most notable being Jermaine Kearse.
Yeah, you tweeted out that video.
And I tried to caution people that it was a gruesome injury. He very much has a broken leg. It was obvious.
It's just a broken leg than a ligament injury.
Typically, because you can heal better than that.
That's why I'm surprised when we're hearing season-ending injury, which I mean, I guess this means requires surgery.
Yes.
It's a broken leg. It's like, you know, it's 8 weeks, probably six for these guys.
No, yeah. this was like his bone was in half.
Protruding.
I don't know if it came out necessarily, but his leg,
compound fracture.
It was a full break. And the Dr. Chow, who former NFL doctor, yep. Right? He watches videos of things happening and then tweets out what he thinks it is based on the video.
His diagnosis.
Right. And he said it would be a season ending. And he believed it to be season ending. ESPN then confirmed that it was a broken leg, but we all kind of knew that. So it has been confirmed by another source. It's bad news. He's going to go on IR. It's just a matter of when they want to put him on IR.
Well, roster spots are opening.
Yeah, so you're going to... And now it becomes, what do you do with that roster spot?
Well, you either wait till somebody else gets cut or you fill it with one of these other guys.
Yeah.
Guys can't.
Well, right. And so your most logical guys just means everybody bumps up a spot, which would mean Andy Jones and Fulgham are probably now pretty very much in the mix. Chris Lacy now becomes in the mix. Brandon Powell now is going to get more attention. And so these guys are fighting for what looks like the last couple of spots. But I can tell you, I was told from somebody else that the Lions had been poking around another organization looking for a speed receiver before Kearse was injured. So I imagine...
Was it with the franchise that they were practicing with all week?
No. But I wouldn't be surprised if they can find the right deal for a guy who has legitimate, like, speed. Because that's a real missing element in the Bevel offense, right? That's something he's had in his previous stops, and they don't really have that guy who can just take the top off the defense. I think they're looking for that. So we're going to have to see what happens with the receiver spot. Basically, something's going to happen, right? One way or another, we'll know a little bit more over the next week. But Kearse wasn't the only one injured in the game. Tom Savage was injured. He left after 11 plays. Head hit the turf a little bit, right? And so I think they might have taken him out for concussion protocol. It's unclear really what happened. But he has a concussion
history.
Wanted
out. He didn't like the number of sacks. He got out.
He had two. He was sacked twice in 11 plays, which is not great. It's not like Fales did any better, right?
And no.
We'll get into that. So we'll see. Losing Tom Savage would be bad for the Lions in the preseason, because fails is not the answer. You're not going to really be able to ascertain how good your other players are with fails throwing them the ball. And you don't want to have to use Matthew Stafford more than you necessarily need to. So getting Tom Savage back is pretty important. Zach Zenner also went down. Looked like he was getting evaluated for a concussion, but he had his helmet at the end of the game, so I think he would have been able to pass that if that's really what it was. In concussion protocol, though, is Tyrell Crosby. Apparently he got hit at some point. And
was it before that terrible sack he relinquished to Jamie Collins?
Well, which one? I mean, he had three of them by my count.
The first one.
I don't know where he got injured, and it's unclear what, but when I was in the locker room after the game, all of the offensive linemen cleared out. They were all, like, they were almost all of them were gone, save for Decker and Glasgow, who were basically on their way out, and then they were gone, right? And reporters are looming around, and then Crosby comes in like 10 minutes after we've been in there in full dress, because they were doing medical tests on him, essentially. And I didn't bother him, but another reporter decided that they would ask him some
questions. But they weren't allowed to talk to him if they're in concussion
protocol. And he said, I'm not allowed to talk to him in concussion protocol right now. And so that's how we found out. So, so we'll see what happens with him. He'll have to go through steps to be cleared in order
to
practice.
Could that be a ruse just to keep him from talking to the media? Just tell him you're in concussion protocol.
Maybe, because they technically don't have to release injury reports. Mm. Maybe. It could be. Let's see who else. Kilgo was limited most of the week. He came off NFI, and then he got re-injured in the game. So back there. He's back injured again. PJ Johnson had a little bit of a limp. I don't know how that will go moving forward. And then Kenny Wiggins had to be retaped during the game, so that's another thing to watch. That's the gist of it. That's where they are. But, I mean, this is like, that's like 20 players that are pretty injured right now. Still got a lot of players that aren't. So we'll see what happens moving forward. We wrapped up training camp this week. Is there anything that we need to talk about from a training camp standpoint before we move on to the game?
How is Tom Brady during training camp?
He does not stop, right? The interesting thing about Tom was that when he was not on the field, which wasn't often because they have three other quarterbacks on that roster, but when he was not on the field, he was with the quarterback's coach, and he was off to the side. And he was constantly being adjusted and put into position so his throwing motion would be constant. Now, maybe that was because he's 42 years old and he needs to be constantly adjusted. But maybe it's because he's just constantly working and that's just the way it is. It looked to me that he was just constantly working. I did find it humorous, though, that he was chucking the ball at his backup, not Stan Hoyer, thank you, the other Michigan
State
guy.
They're close pals. After that first touchdown pass when he went off to the sidelines, mm-hmm. like Brady was all over him. He was holding his tablet in his hands. They were ready to sit down and go over everything they saw. Like, they made a big deal after they reacquired him that mm-hmm. this was Brady's favorite backup because he studies like Brady does. He's been his favorite one to bounce things off of. It's bizarre mm-hmm. that they're Michigan and Michigan State quarterbacks. Yeah. So maybe there's a friendly wager when that game rolls around. But he always seems to be way into it. And I wanted to ask. I hear what you always hear about him.
Well, here's what I found. Here's what I found interesting. One more point I want to add. He would chuck the ball to Hoyer, but when Hoyer would throw the ball back, the quarterback's coach would catch the ball and then hand it to Brady.
Yeah, you can't do anything to hurt Brady.
Yeah, no, they protected him like he was gold. It was
I guess he basically is. What was the energy level like in training camp? Was it better than last season? Was it the same as last season?
I would say when it was just the Lions, it was low. The crowd wasn't there. The Lions had a lower pace. But they were still working hard. You could tell that there was more team unity, but the atmosphere was a little bit more chill, I guess, overall. As opposed to last season, it was like chicken with heads cut off, everyone running everywhere. It was really just kind of chaotic and hard to take all in. And when the Patriots came into town, the intensity ramped up. The crowds got bigger. National media came in. So everything kind of went up a little bit from there. It got intense. P.J. Johnson got kicked out of the second day of practice because went up and pushed
for
somebody.
Some tomfoolery.
Ference's kid. He went after Ference's kid.
You had Alex Karras's great-grandnephew or grandnephew, one or the other. Right. They were on the offensive line together at one point. How did the offense look as the practices went on? Did they start to gel a little bit? Obviously, that did not happen last night, but did it look like they were going somewhere as far as knowing the offensive scheme and got a little more effective as time went on?
With the Patriots or just in general?
Just in general.
In general, I thought they got better playing against each other as the days went on. You could start to see the receivers catching the ball more. You could start to see the tight ends doing more. A lot of things started to work. Then the Patriots come to town, and it continues through drills. They're winning drills. They're doing everything they need to do. They're even doing well in 11-on-11s and 7-on-7s. And then they get to situational football, where they're putting the offense in difficult situations where they have to score in a minute 30, or they have to get in the red zone. And for whatever reason, it was like somebody unplugged the think machine, and they just were disastrous.
This is not out of the ordinary for this team.
But on the plus side, when they did the same thing on the second day, they were much better. They looked smoother. But that one day, when they got to that situational stuff, it was as bad of a set. It was as bad of a day, half day of training camp as I've seen. So it was very surprising. Like for example, when they were in the red zone doing the red zone drills, the first play, Taylor Decker jumped offsides. So they 5-yard penalty. They do it again.
False started.
Correct. Thank you. False started. The second play.
It's a pet peeve of mine.
Sorry.
It's like saying the losers score first.
The second team. Second. So now it's the second snap. Still first down. Amendola false starts. So now they got these two starters both running laps. Then they do get the snap off now, and it gets stuffed. And then the second play, they get the snap off, and then he's sacked. And then the third play, they throw an interception. And it was a comedy of errors of all these things together that nothing worked at all. And then it just kind of went on from there. Now, like I said, they improved on the second day. This is all first team offense that we're talking about here. Now, we didn't get to see any of the first team offense last night. So,
no, of course. I don't want to hear about the second team offense and how they progress.
Well, the second team
hopefully we don't see it all together.
Right.
At all the season, only in the next couple games.
So I'm not overly concerned even with last night's offensive performance because David Fales struggled.
He's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, he played three quarters of the game, and it's difficult to really understand what you're getting out of people. You can get a good concept of the offensive line, but I'm saying which was
alarming.
In the wrong direction. But here's the problem: is that both Savage and Fales have a bad habit of holding the ball too long.
They blamed Savage's first sack on that.
Yeah, he held it too long. He held that ball somewhere between 4 and 5 seconds.
It wasn't really Wiggins' fault, but it was his man that ended up sacking Savage.
It was, yep. You got that correct. Of the starters, the only one that gave up a sack was Wiggins. And technically, Savage held the ball for over 4 seconds. So that's technically considered a coverage sack. So of the sacks that happened, the other 8 came against the second line. And none of the starters got pegged for it. So if you're looking for the optimism here, one, the starters didn't play a whole lot.
Is this Eric's qualifiers? Is this to make us all feel better?
I can give you qualifiers if you want.
Because we also got to throw in Ode Abushi before we get to happy time.
No, I'm getting there.
Okay. Well, I wanted to go more sad time before happy time. We got to break everybody down and then build them back up again.
Well, this is,
we can't just say everything looks flowery.
This looks good for the offense of the starters. What doesn't look good?
They played in like 5 plays.
Okay, the starters have looked good in camp. And the starters that did play, they looked fine on the plays that they played. what looks bad is if any of the starters get hurt, right? And that's where the Odey Igbunosi becomes a problem. Still not sold on Wiggins. Oh, no, and I don't think he should be. I don't think a lot of people are.
Odey Igbunosi was terrible.
Igbunosi looked really bad. I thought Joe Dahl...
busting up those double teams, no problem, those Patriots interior linemen.
And as bad as Igbunosi looked, I thought the tackles looked worse.
Well, because they surrendered all the sacks.
And it wasn't even like...
Crosby's first sack was terrible.
Just speed right past
him. There was no effort at all on the play. That's really alarming, because they're supposed to be competing.
See, he has struggled in camp setting his anchor. And he has also struggled getting to the speed guy. And that's, I think, why a lot of people really looked at Crosby and said, he's a good player, but he's probably going to be a good guard. And he might not be a good tackle. And I think we're starting to see some of this. He looked okay. He looked good as a rookie. I thought the skills are there. But he got exposed both on the left side and the right side in last night's game with the speed rush. And then he was getting exposed in camp by the power rush. And so this is where I think this could be the eye-opener for maybe the Lions and Crosby and say, hey, we've got this kid that's talented, and we want him to be on the outside because he's literally our best option as a reserve tackle, because Donnell was just as bad. And then don't get me started on Nelson and Pope. They're even worse.
They didn't even want to play. They're that bad, they didn't even want to put him out there.
They played one snap, and it was the kneel down. But Crosby's their best option at tackle. And I think they don't want to move him inside because he's their best option. But if they acquire a guy, let's say it cuts or whatever, and they think that he can hold the thing, because that's what happened with Donnell last year, is they acquired him at cuts and said, I think we can handle it. Crosby's long-term future, I still think, is probably inside at guard, because he's not a bad player, but those outside speed rushes were problematic. And he needs to correct those quickly, or we're going to be very terrified if anybody gets hurt on that offensive line.
Yeah, makes me think about the AAF when old Colts guy Polian made the big deal about why we have the AAF. Number one reason: to develop offensive linemen for the NFL. Because look at this, there's nothing beyond those front five and maybe front four.
Well,
it's a red flag, and as we've talked about, we talk about depth.
Mm-hmm.
We got suckered into the depth last year. I told us not to get suckered into the depth this year, and that's kind of where we're at. We can't get suckered. Well, there's nothing to get suckered in with. Depth don't look too good,
you know,
regardless of where we are on the field.
I think you have four solid starters on the offensive line, and then you have four passable players. And the problem, maybe five. The problem with that is... that might not be enough unless you can scheme to account for the weaknesses, right? And that's the question. I don't know if they can. From an offensive perspective, they are doing things. And here's another qualifier. They're not showing us anything on offense right now. They're just giving us the bare bones basics, right? We're seeing stuff in camp that they didn't even get close to in the game. Pre-shift motion.
They used a little bit early on.
But they seem to go away from it. Rub routes. Like the Patriots scored on a rub route. Touchdown. Oh, easy.
Simple. Were they in sync and they were running nice routes and they were nice, accurate passes? It's very upsetting.
As I noted in one of my final training camp articles, they did that same... The Lions ones were doing those same style of things. Now, the reserves... It's harder to execute that with the reserves, and that's why I think we didn't see it last night. But Hockenson and Amendola running rub routes off each other, and Amendola clearing out routes for Hockenson to peel back and disguise back into. And these things are there. I mean, the core is there, and so that's one of the reasons why I think people getting caught up in one game against the Patriots team who, the Patriots are deep. They've always been deep. You can't sustain a roster that is always in the playoffs and always winning the division and always in Super Bowl contention. You can't do that unless you have 53 guys that can all play, right? That's the whole premise behind the Patriots. They can all play. You have some superstars, but you can lose your superstars because you have guys that can play. This is the deepest team in the league. It's not surprising that their twos and threes beat up on our twos and threes. That is not even at all surprising. But like I said, the biggest surprise for me was that offensive line play. I'm not shocked that our receivers struggled to get open. That doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, that's
you shocked that it was so easy for the Patriot receivers to get open against our... Because it's their receivers and our reserve defensive backs. So they made it look easy.
So you're missing...
Stidham and Hoyer both played very well.
Mm-hmm. You didn't have Darius Slay. You didn't have Melvin. You didn't have Tabor. You didn't have Justin Coleman. So there's your top five, four, right there, that are not playing. So now you're getting into guys that are maybe dime situational guys and more fringe roster guys. Now, Agnew played half the snaps or so. But again, he was playing mostly on the outside, which is new to him. And I don't know if that's necessarily somewhere where they want to put him in the actual games. Oruwari is a rookie. Mike Ford's only in his second year. These and D. Virgins, what is it, like his third? These are all guys that are... that we're putting out there against the Patriots. Keep in mind, the Patriots' first, second, and third rounders are all playing with the third string on the Patriots. I mean, that's how deep they are. They got their so you've got their first round
and
first,
Keel Harry,
number
eight on your roster, playing, same as Jamie Collins for some reason.
And so he's 6'4", going up against a legit 5'9" Jamal Agnew, and a second year undrafted guy in Mike Ford. He should win those battles. He really should. I mean, like, he was the first-round pick, and he should beat these battles. He should be able to win against these guys. So it's not overly surprising. If he was doing that against Darius Slay, then I'd be like, oh, man, we're in trouble. If he was doing that against Melvin, I'd be like, well, again, I'm not overly surprised. It's because, you know, that's kind of what we're looking at here. That's another weak spot on our roster. But for him to beat Mike Ford and Jamal Agnew, that's not overly surprising. I thought Mike Ford had a decent game when it was all said and done, by the way. But it's, yeah, I mean, I said in the Periscope before the game, the offensive line is going to be a problem. But the second biggest problem that we're going to have is guarding those shifty slot receivers. And the Patriots have a ton of them. So outside of even Harry, like Berrios, he had his way with the Lions secondary pretty much all week, and he's that shifty slot guy. He was playing basically the old Danny Amendola role that's now the Edelman role, right? And those guys are going to give the Lions problems. And so sometimes you can get away with it based on the teams that you're playing, but then other times you're going to run up into like a team like the Vikings, and you're going to have to deal with not Diggs, Thielen.
Thielen.
Yeah, you're going to have to. Thielen is going to be a problem for this Lions team. And you're going to have to be creative in how you do
that. Note to fantasy owners.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I'm trying not to get. I try to encourage fans. It's one game. And it's
only
one game.
It's all the reserves.
And you're playing the Super Bowl champs. And
they beat the Super Bowl champs last year at home.
But this game, ones against ones, anyone can win in the NFL. But twos against threes, totally different ballgame. The disparity between a starter in the NFL and a third team guy who's not going to make the roster is significant. And what we were watching was a whole lot of guys that weren't going to be on an NFL roster. The ones that were that struggled, we already talked about that, like Crosby and Donnell. That's where my concern is coming out of last night's game. It's not that the offense didn't move the ball. It's not that the receivers didn't match up totally well. I thought there were enough things that the younger guys showed that brought, you know, some signs of encouragement. But the big like flashing lights, that was after none of the offensive line can get hurt. If the offensive line gets hurt, it's going to be a problem unless there's a dramatic shift in the other direction.
So that's Eric building us back up. I still think there's a couple major red flags in the game, but I'm not going to get too overly angry. I don't think they should fire Quinn or Patricia or whatever.
Oh, man.
I'm sure some people are talking like that. But mm-hmm.
Oh, for sure.
It's one game. I think we had this argument a couple of years ago when they totally didn't show up for a preseason game under Caldwell. And now I said it was bad omen.
Yeah.
It might have been against the very same Patriots. But
they had that now. They had that same problem last year.
Week one against the Jets,
and then that carried over. Yeah. So, like, I say this is one game, and not to be overly concerned, but if they go to Houston and they lay an egg in Houston, now I understand if people are starting to get a little bit more concerned. And then you have the Browns and the Bills, the last two, and if you don't show up against those two, then I'll acknowledge the panic and say, all right, Martin, maybe now it's legit. But this is one preseason game against the Patriots that it's just not – I'm not getting my feathers ruffled over this right now. I've seen enough positive things out of the starters to say that I still like what I'm seeing. But there are warning signs. There are some concerns on the roster for sure. I mean, you want to talk about what's some of your other red flags? Or do you want to talk about something else? We can go in a couple of
things. Well, no, we hammered on everything a lot. Okay. I mean, it was the major stuff's the defensive secondary because they've surrendered well over 300 yards passing at a very high completion percentage clip.
Yep.
The giving up 8-9 sacks is totally unforgivable. And then just them not being effective anywhere else.
Well, let's
Sam Martin had a bad punt, but that's one bad punt. But we're here and he's playing so much better and blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, well, he can still stink it up out there every now and again.
Yeah, I mean, it's kicking in the
NFL. Not a lot of kickers do that. I mean, not a lot. A lot of kickers do that, but the good ones don't.
Okay. Would you say that Gostkowski is one of the best kickers in the game?
Well, an excellent point. Because he flubbed it up yesterday.
Exactly, it's the preseason for everybody, and that happens, right? I want to go back to one point you just mentioned, was that the secondary was getting torched, and they were.
Well, you already explained it. Now it was,
but I want to take it one more step further, and a big reason that they were getting exposed out there was because the defensive line was struggling to get pressure. And that's been a common
thing. Well, there was another... No, good thing you brought that up because they weren't bringing pressure from anywhere. Like, and we talked about even Kevin Strong. I'm sure he'll come up in a minute.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, none of those guys were getting any pressure. They weren't disrupting anything. So, and they also gave up well over 100 yards rushing in the game.
So I put out my roster stack today. And that in that is I lock in. I say, all right, these are the 53 guys that I think are going to make the roster. Here are my defensive linemen that I have making the roster. Trey Flowers didn't play. Romeo Okwara played 6 snaps. Damon Harrison didn't play. Mike Daniels didn't play. A'shaun Robinson didn't play. Deshaun Hand didn't play. End of list. They didn't play a single defensive lineman other than Okwara 6 snaps. So, again, I'm not overly shocked. I like Kevin Strong, and I think he has potential, but he's also an undrafted rookie, and he can only play.
He's lining up against Kirk Ferentz's kid. The Patriots starting offensive line, I can't remember. Did they all play? Or did they only play one series? They went to their backups. I mean, Hoyer started the game, but they were in the backups extremely early as well.
I would think so. I don't even know exactly who their offensive. I don't even know if they use their starters. To be honest, it looks like most of their guys here played. They played their tackles. And Ivy and Lang, and Skip. Oh God, Dan Skipper. I didn't even realize he was there. And then St. Louis. Those are all backups. They split the game 50-50. Ferentz and Froholt. Froholt's a rookie out of Arkansas. That's Ragnow's buddy. They played 100% of the snaps. Yeah, I don't think they played the starting offensive line at all. I think they played all backups.
Oh, there you go.
So, I mean, but again, their starting defensive tackles were Darius Kilgo and John Atkins. They're both nose tackles, right? You're not going to get penetration with John Atkins and Darius Kilgo. No. They're just not. I mean, and then you're asking
Aaron. Should stop the run a little better. Unless they go to the outside.
They
like
should.
Crazy.
But if you watch them, they were getting moved. PJ Johnson, he had a decent game, but he was getting moved. And as much as we love Snacks, and we look at him and we say it's a nose tackle, he's unmovable, and we need somebody to give him a break, I don't know if John Atkins, PJ Johnson, or Kilgo are good enough to be able to replicate that. I actually think that they're going to use
Harrison, Daniels over or whatever.
I think they're going to use Harrison as a nose tackle 60% of the time, and he or 50% of the time they're going to use a nose. The other 10, he's going to play the 3 technique. And then in those other situations, they're going to put 2-3 techniques out there, which is going to be Mike Daniels and A'shaun Robinson or Deshaun Hand, get him in the middle. And I don't know if they're going to carry a nose tackle, a backup nose tackle. Maybe they want a big plugger. Like the, last year, they added Atkins at the end of the year. And, you know, but with Daniels and Robinson, they have familiarity playing the nose. They have familiarity playing, I mean, obviously they're going to be 3 techniques, but I think you can get away with not keeping a backup nose tackle. That takes me now to Kevin Strong. And Kevin Strong is the guy who I think has a chance to make the team, because if they're not going to keep a nose tackle, Kevin Strong is a guy who has that position flexibility like Deshaun Hand, and now you could see him get in.
All right. Let's buoy everybody's spirits. Player of the game, Ty Johnson, running back.
Yeah. I mean, he played against same amount of snaps as Zach Zenner, and I think most people see Kerryon and C.J. Anderson is the 1-2, and then it's, who's it going to be, Ty Johnson or Zach Zenner? Well,
Ty Johnson, 3 carries, 22 yards. Zach Zenner, 3 carries, 13 yards.
And Ty Johnson came off the bench first. Now, I think it's very possible they looked to Ty Johnson before they looked to Zach Zenner, because he brings a different skill set than Zenner. Zenner's a bit more repetitive, but that by no means is a knock on Zenner, because Zenner is a reliable player that I think is going to have a role. And Zenner is also a special teams contributor, whereas Ty Johnson didn't do any special teams at all. So I think both of them have a spot on this roster, and it could just be that Ty Johnson, because of his uniqueness, is maybe could be considered the RB3. But I think we're splitting hairs if we want to go down that route.
Snap counts. We talked about a couple of them stand out. Of course, Savage, only playing a handful. We talked that was an 11 to
36.
30, which is sad. They've only had 7, 47 plays, whereas the Patriots hit over 80 on us.
84,
because Eric Lee had 79 of those snaps. He played the entire game on defense. He played hero ball.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about the weaknesses and the guys missing on the defensive line. Eric Lee can play jack, and he can play down defensive end, and he did play both. And so Mitchell Levin, we saw him playing down defensive end and 3 technique, right? And so there's a lot of guys that got some extra work on the defensive side of the ball, because there's injuries all over the place.
Sadly, we only saw T.J. Hockenson 6 times.
Yeah, but I think that speaks to, again, his value to the team, where they don't think that he needs to be they didn't want to risk injury with him, right? And they did that with a couple other offensive guys. One that stood out to me the most was Nick Bowden,
he only played the one series. He was out there right away.
Yep. As a starter, and I think that tells you all you need to know. And then they took him out. I think he is a guy who they view as a valuable chess piece, and they didn't want to put him in harm's way.
Now, Isaac Nauta and Jerome Cunningham, because James only played 7 snaps himself. So the next 2 tight ends up. And, well, Logan Thomas played 10, but are we thinking he's cemented as the third guy?
Three, yeah. Right. So that means Nauta and Cunningham are in a position for 4. They both played about the same amount of snaps. And Nauta got a target. Cunningham didn't get any. Nauta had some impressive blocks as well. Because of his ceiling, I still give him the edge as that number 4 tight end.
We talked about the offensive tackles. We talked about the problems at offensive guard. C.J. Anderson got out there and played for 1 series. We saw him. He didn't look as heavy as I thought he would.
No, I think, you know, with all the – he wears all that stuff in practice, so it's been deceiving, I think, to us that maybe he was heavier, even though he said he wasn't.
You mentioned Kevin Strong, 51 snaps out of 84, so he played a bevy of the game.
That was more than I thought, too, because – I felt like there were nose tackles out there constantly. And Kevin Strong really was the only non-nose tackle, so I guess that kind of makes sense. But yeah, you know, when I talked to Kevin after the game, he said he still has a lot to work on, and he was disappointed that he wasn't able to do more. But he's got a good head on his shoulders. I like where his mind is.
Spielman talked about him a lot, and you talked about him a bit last week. Miles Killebrew starting to play. They're using him now all of a sudden at linebacker. Now, you pointed out the injuries, but He still played, what was it?
Over 50, 58.
55 snaps.
So no Jared Davis, no Christian Jones. Tavai only plays six snaps because they, again, want to protect Tavai. So that means Jalen Reeves, Maven, and Miles Killebrew are your most senior guys that are going to take the most snaps. And Killebrew is such a valuable special teams player, and now he's actually showing that he can be competent as a linebacker, which is something he couldn't do last year. That's a path to the roster for him, and he right now is in my 53, which he wasn't before.
Just a few weeks ago, we were talking about he's gone. Yep. This is it.
Yep,
it's over for him.
It sure looked that way 2 weeks ago, and then this is a perfect example of a special teams player getting an opportunity and then taking advantage of it. It doesn't happen often, but this is a great example of it. And when he talked in the locker room after, he talked about the fact that this defense is really works for him because his job is see it, run, hit it. And that's what he has to do. See it, run it, hit it. And that's really plays into his strengths because he struggles as a coverage guy, and that's why they moved him from safety to linebacker. But now he just got to see the ball, get there fast, smack him out, smack that ball as hard as he can. And that's what he does. And there's a role for that. And It's going to be hard to it would have been hard to put him in if he was a special teams only guy, but if he's showing what he's showing at linebacker says, all right, maybe you make some room for him now.
Pittman versus Lamar. Now we're scraping the bottom of the linebacker barrel.
Now we're talking practice squad, right? And I think what was interesting about this battle to me was that everybody's so high on Lamar because he played at Clemson. Right, and Pittman is a guy nobody really knew about because he played at Wayne State. They played Pittman 51 snaps. They played Lamar 17. Right, that's a big disparity. Right, now they both ended up with five tackles, but it was very interesting. Lamar had four tackles on one drive. They just kept running it his way, and he just kept making the tackles. I don't think he had five tackles in all of training camp. Like, he's been that dislodged. Now, maybe he's a gamer, and that's just...
Gamer.
Yeah, and maybe he just comes to play. But the thing is if you're looking for an undrafted linebacker who you think is going to make the practice squad, right now, it's Anthony Pittman. And I think Garrett Dooley is probably still ahead of him. But he's injured right now, and so Pittman's taking advantage of that. Good for him.
Finally, Will Harris.
So, okay, we've talked about Will Harris, being a third-round pick and how maybe he would follow the Tracy Walker path. And we've talked in the past about him being behind, right? But he led the team in special teams snaps. He was the guy who, I think, what did he end up with?
17.
17 snaps, which was, in the high 70s as far as percentage-wise. So,
sorry, 19.
They're going to use him. Oh, thank you. They're going to use him on special teams heavily and in a lot of different ways. And that's, I think, actually bad news for Charles Washington. And Charles Washington is very good.
Was he hurt or did he play at all yesterday?
He played, let me get notes on him. I don't remember him. He played 14 snaps on defense and 12 on special teams.
So he was out there.
Yeah, he did make a nice special teams play. But I don't know. How's he going to get on? I don't know where he's going to fit in because they've got guys that they like with upside. They got guys with depth. If you've got Killebrew, I don't know who you're going to keep. But if you're losing Charles Washington, you're probably keeping Andy Jones on offense. And I don't think that's too far of a stretch to say anymore. And I think people have questioned it before, but they're going to need Andy Jones's special teams ability. If they lose Washington, and Andy Jones can be like your wide receiver five. And so, the Lions will still be looking for wide receiver four like we talked about. But I think Andy Jones is in a better spot right now than Charles Washington from a special team standpoint.
All right. Do you want to talk about the rest of the roster? You kind of just mentioned what's happening at the bottom, but you have your article out with their latest roster stack. Did you want to hit on anything there? I don't think there's anything.
No, I don't
that
think
it's big of note. We only have a minute or so.
Yeah, no, for the most part, it's a lot of what I expected going into training camp. The big change really was just the hierarchy of who sits where shifted around a little bit. Like I bumped Will Harris down a couple sections because I thought maybe he was competing to start for that third spot. Now he's not. I added Miles Killebrew in, and I made notes on all these things too in the article, and we'll link to it in the piece. So, I think we kind of know where we're at, and we covered a bunch here.
Fred McLeod and Chris Spielman on the call. Fred had one big
gaffe.
Yeah, he called the team. He called them the Cavs. You know, as we know, he's the play-by-play man for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
20 years of bad habits, I guess.
Right? I guess. Well, see, he hasn't been 20 years as the Cavs announcer, right?
Oh, I don't know. I thought
apparently he did Lions broadcasts for the preseason back in the 80s.
Correct.
So the players have changed since then. Chris Spielman was probably one. Well, no, probably not. He probably wasn't even with the team yet. But Spielman, he wasn't as jacked up as he normally is, so he's easing his way into football this year.
Do you think it was the lack of success that
I don't know, partially, but that would have meant he would have been fired up at the beginning of the game, and he really wasn't. So
okay.
Or subdued. His fine crew, TJ Lang,
that's what I was wondering about.
They used him sparingly. Okay. You know, he wasn't up in the booth. He was down on the field.
I think they missed an opportunity with all the beer chugging things that are going on around the league, and like all these players going to sporting events and chugging these beers,
doing goofball things.
I think that would have been a prime opportunity for TJ Lang
to show off his versatility.
But
as a former Packer offensive lineman, I can chug beer like his friend Bakhtiari.
It's probably better that he didn't, though, keeping that professionalism.
Well, he's
going.
A professional. He's on TV. He's not just put on the camera at the Bucks game or Pistons game in our case. So. That's it. That's all we got.
We got a lot. I'm pretty stunned by our listeners and their ability to spread the word about us. And
huge leap in reviews.
Yeah, we went from 206 to 219.
It was wonderful.
Puts us in striking distance of a couple other ones as far as ratings goes, which is good for our status. It helps bump us up higher end pages. We've heard lots of positive reviews, like I said, online, and then there have been reviews left. There were four more written reviews that go along with all these ratings. Wendell Jenner, WM Rob, No Curses, which I think is for you. That I would hope that they've changed their name just so that they could
just to placate me.
And then MSU AJ, which I believe is a gentleman I interact with all the time, who lives out in Arizona, if I'm not mistaken. If it's not, it's somebody else that has a similar name. So we got four new reviews. I met a couple people at training camp that had nice things to say. One of the people that I met on the final day, I just happened to run into him. His name was Father Thomas Salazar. He came up to me. He made a point to walk over and say hi. And he had some extraordinarily nice things to say to me about the podcast and the things that we do. And he's talked about how he had recommended it to other people and how they enjoyed it. And those are the types of things that, you know, motivate us to keep doing what we do. And then also, that's how the word gets spread about us. And
it's number one way.
And those things are incredibly valuable to us. And I tried to express that to him, that I really appreciate what he did, but I wanted to make sure that we said it here too, just so that if he's listening, which I hope he is, that we appreciated what he's doing, and that anybody else who is doing that and we just don't know about it, we appreciate that as well, because this is really what's making us grow and
continue to exist.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is wonderful. And thanks for everybody else who are just listening and enjoying on their own. That's it for this week. We got the Houston Texans next week, so you won't hear from us until after the Texans game, but it won't even be us. It'll just be Eric. So, and he'll probably have a guest host. We'll see how that all works out.
Yeah.
I won't see how it all works out. I will be out of town.
You enjoy your vacation before the season begins.
Yeah, no, this is the perfect time to fit it in before it gets too football crazy. Yeah.
I'll try and do something creative. It won't just be me talking into the mic for an hour, because the podcast will go out of control if it's just me.
It'll end up being 3 hours long. It'll be the full game length.
So we'll get somebody. I know people have liked when we bring other guests on, so I'll see what I can do, and hopefully bring some entertainment for the fans, even despite your absence.
All right. So until that time, let's go Lions.